Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, and my excellent producer, Nikki Starr, is also here today. Nikki wasn't able to be with us last week, and I understand that she has a television gig coming up soon. Is that right, Nikki?
Yes, it's still tentative for travel plans. And I, you know what, I was just looking for the name. It's the Dave and Jillian on Fox News.
Oh, yes.
And so it'll be with me and Fly Lady, Marla Silly, and we'll be talking about how her system works for me at work and just different things like that. So, and also on Better.tv, so there's two of them.
Two of them, and you don't have a definite date yet on that, Nikki?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be October 1st, but they're going to tape it. I'm not sure when it's going to air.
So you'll keep us posted about that.
You know
that.
I will. Yeah. I will.
Well, I don't know anybody who works as hard as you do for Blog Talk Radio, and I want you to know how much we all appreciate all your help and support. And we really did miss you last week, so I'm glad you're with us today.
Thank you. Me too.
And as you know, Nikki, we're going to be talking about the new Coen Brothers movie that was released last Friday, Burn After Reading. And we'll get into talking about some other films by Joel and Ethan Coen. And our two guests are film critics John P. McCarthy and mad movie man A.J. Hockery, who certainly are no strangers to the show. You know, they've both been here several times before, and it's always great to hear their interesting opinions about movies. But, Nikki, before getting into today's topic, I'd like to encourage anyone who wasn't able to hear last week's Judy Garland tribute show to check out the archives. Lorna Luft, Judy's daughter, was absolutely terrific. And the mother-daughter medley that she gave us permission to play simply blew everyone away. Just hearing Judy and Lorna singing together sent chills up and down my spine, and it was an unforgettable experience for all of us that were listening to that show. Also, since we didn't take any calls last week, I wanted to mention that if you want to get in contact with Lorna, you can email her by going to her website, and that's www.lornaluft.com, and that's LORNALUFT, lornaluft.com. And there are directions on that site as to how to email her. I believe it's a link to Lorna's MySpace site. And thanks to Jean on the scene from last week's chat room for calling that to my attention. And I also want to thank Maytel from Stiletto Entertainment for sending us the Lorna Judy medley, and Nikki, you, for helping to make sure that we were able to hear it on the show. It was kind of
last minute,
that's right. We got it, about an hour before the show? And you were in production on another show?
Actually, Demos did it. He did it.
Who did?
That's good. Demos.
Oh, Demos. Well, definitely we want to thank Demos, and also thank Demos for helping with the chat last week, too. And I just have one more announcement. Sunny Goodman has invited me to be her guest on BTR Addicts tomorrow at noon Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm so excited about talking to her, even though she said that I have to reveal some deep, dark secrets on that show. So I hope most of my Movie Addict friends will listen in and hear some of those deep, dark secrets that I'm trying to think I should mention on the show. Okay, it's time to talk about Burn After Reading. And John McCarthy, who's the editor of Cineman Syndicate, is already here to get things started. And the Mad Movie Man should be joining us in a few minutes. Okay, it's my pleasure now to welcome John back to Movie Addict Headquarters. Hi, John.
Hi, Betty Jo. Thanks for having me back.
You're always welcome here at Movie Addict Headquarters. It's such a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm so glad you could join us today. And I know that you've seen Burn After Reading. I also saw it on Friday. Well, actually, I was the first one at the box office Friday for the matinee. I enjoyed it very, very much. I laughed from beginning to end in that movie, but it was wild. So why don't you give us a brief summary of that wild plot?
Okay, I'll give it my best shot because, you know, Coen Brothers movies are always filled with lots of incidents. So I'm
going to
take a stab at it. The movie begins at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, where an analyst named Osborne Cox, who's played by John Malkovich, and Osborne wears a bow tie and is a Princeton graduate, kind of a pompous character. He gets demoted, taken off the Balkan desk by his superiors because they say he's got a bad drinking problem, which indeed he does. And
but he doesn't admit it.
He doesn't admit it, and he flies off the handle, to be honest, and quits, and goes home to his Georgetown townhouse, where his wife, a very icy woman played by Tilda Swinton, is there. And she's not too sympathetic, but
that's the understatement of the year.
That's right. Osborne decides he's going to get his revenge by writing his memoirs, and so he pours himself another drink and begins to do that. Meanwhile, his wife is having an affair with a federal marshal, played by George Clooney, who's quite the womanizer. And she wants to leave Osborne, divorce Osborne, and marry this character. And she goes to a lawyer, and he advises her on what to do. And so she comes home and swipes some material off Osborne's computer, some financial data. And it turns out she gets a lot of information that he wants to put into his memoirs. And she puts it onto a computer disk. Well, this computer disk ends up at the Hard Bodies gym in the suburbs. And someone has left it there, and we learn later who it is or how it got there. But two employees at Hard Bodies, played by Frances McDormand and Brad Pitt, get a hold of this and decide to blackmail Osborne with this information. They think it's full of all sorts of sensitive national secrets.
Right.
And McDormand's character is named Linda Lipsky, and Linda wants to use the money she gets to have some plastic surgeries because she feels like she's middle-aged and a little tired and saggy and wants to revitalize her love life, so to speak, and just feel better about herself. And Pitt's character, Chad Feldheimer, is just a gym rat with this blonde bouffant hairdo, and he's a real airhead, let's put it that way. And Linda isn't too bright either, to be honest. But they try and blackmail Osborne, and you know, it goes from there. There is another connection between the two because Linda goes online on an online dating service and ends up meeting a guy who happens to be Harry, the character played by George Clooney.
And that's the way they get intertwined, so to speak.
That's right. That's how the stories are, the two different groups are linked in that way as well. But it goes on from there. It's a total farce, and it's quite funny. I laughed a lot, too.
We had a group of about six of us that attended the matinee of Burn After Reading, and we just couldn't stop laughing and talking about it after the movie and then chuckling. I sit here chuckling now just thinking about some of the scenes. But I really like the way you summarized the plot without giving away the surprises that are in store for everyone. And believe me, there are a lot of surprises. And, you know, John, that's what I like in the many reviews that you do at Cineman Syndicate. So I appreciate that very much. Well, what did you enjoy the most about After Reading?
Let me just add that because even though it's a comedy and there's lots of laughs, it's still a Coen Brothers movie, so there's lots of violence, and
it's
comedy as well. But it sort of takes you by surprise. I thought it was really chuckle worthy, as I put it, and very fast paced, and it tends towards the ridiculous a little bit, but there's such self-assured filmmakers that they just catch you up and you have to go with them no matter how outrageous they are. And it's just fun watching these A-list actors like Clooney and Pitt behave so in such a goofy way.
I agree with you there. Of course, we've seen Clooney goofy before. He was goofy in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which was another Coen movie,
mm-hmm.
But this may be the goofiest that he's been, and I like what you said too about watching these A-list actors behave in that sort of a way. That I thought it was absolutely perfectly cast, down to the smallest cameo, the little scene with the plastic surgeon.
Yes, yes.
Who was talking with McDormand's character and trying to explain to her what needed to be done, and then adjusting his conversation every time she she made some comment. You know, he could really turn it back to something that he could do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every single actor, I think, just did a perfect job in this.
Betty Jo, I read in an interview that the brothers, they wrote this while they were also writing the screenplay for No Country for Old Men.
Oh my!
And the Oscar and is quite bleak, and although it has some similarities, is pretty much on the opposite end of the spectrum. And they claim that they wrote it with the characters in mind. They came up with the actors that they wanted to use first and then sort of built something around them, and I think that shows. But Malkovich couldn't have a more characteristic part or more appropriate part, and Pitt making fun of his pretty boy image, and Clooney being the Lothario, sort of making light of that, is very good as well. And of course, Frances McDormand is married to Joel Coen, and
right,
they always write well for her.
Yes, when she's in a Coen Brothers movie, it's going to be a good one, because they make sure there's a great part for her in it. I think she's been in about five of their movies. But I was wondering, not everyone takes to this movie like you and I did. Our colleague, Donald Levitt, in his review, said that it was just easy cynicism. And he didn't speak very highly of the film at all. He of course, liked Fargo very much, and he was disappointed in the lack of inspiration in Frances McDormand's character here as compared to the one she played in Fargo.
Well, I understand that, and Donald's not alone in that. It seems to me that they do go for a lot of easy laughs, but, sometimes that's okay. That didn't bother me too much. And not every character can be as well-rounded and as deep as Marge Gunderson in Fargo, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Me too.
And, on a much different level than this. I mean, Burn After Reading is clearly a lark. I mean, they had some fun, and it really looks like it was fun to make, like everyone was having a good time, and I think that's infectious. And, if you don't like their sort of misanthropic view of the world, then, which is the stuff of comedy, as we know. I mean, you do, they make fun of these characters, and, you know, if that bothers you, then you may not like it as much. But it does get to the point, too, where I think you wonder, are they making fun of me for finding this so funny almost? But
Oh, right.
Another level. But, you know, I can deal with their cynicism when it's so funny, frankly.
I don't have any trouble with that too when it's a movie like this. You had mentioned in your review that you didn't find that you thought it was underdeveloped, and I wondered what you meant by that.
Well, I do think that it ends very abruptly. And obviously, they're so in control of what they're doing that nothing is done unintentionally. And I understand why it makes a point, the fact that it ends abruptly and there's certain pieces to the story that we don't actually see but we hear about. But I almost, you know, and the character played by J.K. Simmons sort of throws up his hands and sort of shrugs, and you know, I guess that's part of the theme of the movie. On the other hand, I did get the feeling that they just sort of ran out of steam and didn't know how to bring it all together, and just decided that you know, a 96-minute movie was enough, and sort of stopped. So I wanted more, maybe, is the problem, and so I wanted it going a little bit.
Well, that was the feeling that I had too, John. I wanted more closure, especially on a couple of the characters. And, of course, I don't want to give anything away here and ask you to tell what happened there. But I did have another complaint about the film, and this is my frequent inner church lady.
Oh, right.
I that pervasive use of the F word. Now, see, I didn't mind all the violence. I mean, this is a little bit strange. I mean, I'm worried about them using the F word so much. It seems unnecessary and annoying. It's just, you know, just over and over again sort of takes you away from what's happening. And so that bothered me. But
I completely agree with you. And that's happened in another of their movies, actually, The Lady Killers.
Yes.
The remake of the Ealing Studio movie, where I thought it just had way too much profanity and it really detracted from it. In this case, I think it was definitely true of John Malkovich's character. I think he got it's a very interesting character, and Malkovich is a unique actor and does his thing with it. But I felt like they sort of ran out of things for him to do, and so he just, you know, cursed a blue streak. So I know what you're talking about, especially in regard to that character.
I think that he was the worst offender. But I think that the Mad Movie Man has just called in, so let's see if we can get him on the line. Hello, is this AJ?
This is.
Oh, I'm so glad you could be with us today. I was getting a little bit worried. How are you?
Not too bad. How about you guys?
Fine. And
we
were just talking about, of course, the Coen brothers and Burn After Reading, and we were just starting to talk about the performances in the film. I was about to ask, because I had said that this film was perfectly cast, so why don't we start you out, AJ, finding out what the Mad Movie Man thinks about the performances. Who were the standouts in the acting realm here? Do you want to take that one, AJ?
Sure, and I got to say, like, you're right, this was a perfectly cast movie, and easily the standout has to be Brad Pitt, who, like, when I saw the movie, the thing I said to my friends was, what Javier Bardem did for Evil in No Country for Old Men, Brad Pitt does for Stupid in Burn After Reading. He, like, redefines it and just turns the mood into a character, and it was just a riot to watch all the way.
I have to agree with you, and he was the most surprising cast against type. I mean, he's just not playing with a full deck, and he gets in way, way over his head. But then, of course, Frances McDormand couldn't be better as another John put it, she's not too bright either. She's obsessed with finding money for the plastic surgery she thinks she need. And I have to agree with Donald Levitt, who said it's certainly not an inspirational role, but she's just...
And I caught the tail end. You were talking about Malkovich's performance.
Yes.
And you were kind of... It kind of sounded like you weren't really thrilled with all the profanity that his character used.
Yeah, we didn't like the F word just constantly.
Actually, that's one of the funnier parts of the character, because if there is a point to the whole movie, and, you know, this is a movie that admits that there is no point whatsoever. Like, even at the end, not to spoil anything, the two government people go, what did we learn?
What did we learn?
Not to do it again.
Well,
whatever it is, not to do it again. But if there was a point to the movie, it was to sort of, like, take the whole world of, like, spy movies and that are kind of really stuffy and grown kind of cliche and predictable and turn them on their ear. And I think for Malkovich's character, it sort of represented the, you would normally think, like, a suave, sophisticated man who uses words to do his battles, but here he's like an immature child. So yeah. I thought the profanity really befitted the character.
Well, maybe there was some thought behind it. John, what about you in terms of the best performances in this movie? What do you think?
Well, you made a point, Betty Jo, about I agree with AJ in terms of Brad Pitt really brought some sparkle to the movie, you know, and you know, he was such an innocent, and you couldn't help but sort of laugh at him, but like him at the same time. You know, some of the smaller characters were done so well. Richard Jenkins, the character actor, plays their boss at the gym, and he's pining for Linda. And again, he plays it very straight and does a great job. And I think Tilda Swinton, you know, does a great job as well, playing it straight as the mean. And she turns out to be a pediatrician, which is a joke in and of itself because she's so cold. But
I'd hate to have one of my kids have one of her patients.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Every single character, just down to the smallest cameo, was just played absolutely perfectly. You know, we already have a call, and I think it might be one of our regular callers. Let's see if this is Jazz Shaw. Hello, is this Jazz?
Hi, Betty Jo. It is. How are you today?
Just fine. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. A bit
well,
busy,
good.
But I always
are
take
you?
Time out from the day for your show.
Thank you very much. We're always so happy when you called. Have you seen Burn After Reading or any of the
I have not, but it is one of the few that I'm going to make time for. Believe it or not, you'll be so disappointed in me. I have not been to the theater this year since Iron Man. So there's a lot of movies that got put onto my, unfortunately, Netflix list because work has just been crazy. But this is one I am going to make time for. Not only do I like the Coen brothers, but I will always show up for John Malkovich. And I'm disappointed to hear during your interview saying that perhaps he wasn't used to his fullest capacity or maybe didn't perform to standard, because he's one of my favorite actors.
Well, I think he performed well. Everybody performed well, but it's just the dialogue that he was given. But I'm kind of changing my mind now that AJ mentioned that this foul language was just very much a part of his character. So there's nothing wrong with his performance. I think he was great in the movie, just like everyone else was. But do you have a favorite Coen Brothers film?
Yeah, it's going to sound probably pretty trite because it's so recent and, unlike some of the other ones, wasn't as controversial and got so much acclaim. But after I walked out of the theater, I did have to say that No Country for Old Men was possibly the best Coen Brothers movie I'd seen, and it's one of the better movies to come along in a very, very long time. It was just so engrossing, and I was, you know, on my edge of the... I don't always get wrapped up in the characters that much, but that movie really wrapped me up, and I love No Country for Old Men.
I think probably John and AJ will agree with you, but Nikki and I will not. But am I right about you, John?
Absolutely. I think No Country for Old Men is great, and the question is, how much does it have to do with Cormac McCarthy? No relation to me in terms of his wonderful book that gave them the material, because it's really the only movie that they've adapted another work for. But I do love it.
And AJ, I know, if I can remember right, that's one of the movies that you liked the best from last year, right?
Yep, No Country for Old Men was definitely a great movie, but it's not my favorite Coen Brothers movie, although I have to say right now that the Coens hold a special place in my heart because I have seen every single one of their movies, and I have not disliked any of them. I have always liked all the stuff that I've seen of theirs, but my number one has to be one of my five favorite movies of all time, Fargo.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because John has already admitted that that's one of his favorite all-time movies, and it's one of mine, too. I just think that's, and that performance of Frances McDormand as Marge Gunderson just absolutely is one of the best performances ever on film. But
see, we say this every week. I would never make it as a movie critic because Fargo kind of fell flat for me. Of all the Coen brother movies, that was one. It certainly wasn't bad, but I was left wanting a lot more when I walked out.
Well, nobody's perfect, Jazz. Remember, we've told
it's
you that.
It's my fault. I
we've
know.
Told
I
you
know.
That
I'm
before,
terrible.
But I want to get Nikki on here for a minute because I need some backup in terms of No Country for Old Men.
Hey.
Hey.
What did you say?
I'm not a fan of the Coen brothers, okay?
Boo,
I
like Fargo, boo.
The only movie of theirs I liked that I will even – I'm just – okay, I'm bizarre, and they are beyond bizarre. And when I walk out of a movie, like just listening to you describe the movie got me lost. And I'm like, why is that funny? That's just so not funny.
You have to be pretty weird, I think, too.
Pretty weird, and I just go, that's just not funny to me. I think, you know what I really think? I think they're pretentious, and I think they know they're not that funny, okay? But everybody pretends to think they're funny because they're intelligent. That's what I think. And so they're not going to say, oh, that movie was really horrible because they don't want to, you know, look unintelligent.
Oh, well, that's kind of the way I felt about No Country for Old Men. Yes. I felt like I was, you know, out in the wilderness until you mentioned that you didn't like it. I thought it had just a terrible ending. And I think I'm so used to movies with background music and the lack of that in No Country for Old Men, which I'm sure was done for dramatic purpose, but it didn't work for me. But now you said there was one Coen brother film that you did like.
I loved Fargo.
All right, we're unanimous on Fargo. So that
yeah,
so I'm glad to
film.
I'm glad to hear
not,
that.
Not even Big Lebowski, Nikki. Not even Lebowski.
Okay, yeah. You know what? It's actually funny that you mentioned that because my boyfriend and I just had the discussion over it. I don't see the humor in it. I just don't.
Oh.
Maybe he was mistaken for someone else. Oh, yeah, well, I just don't get it. I don't know. I try to because, like, I'm a big fan of abstract humor. I love that type of movie. I do, but I just don't get them. And I've tried. I want to jump on that
bandwagon. Did you like The Italian Job, Nikki?
It was
The Italian Job?
I was just curious for those kind of abstract, kind of twisting
yeah,
plot kind of things.
Right.
I thought I heard her mention once she liked that, and I was
yeah.
trying to draw a comparison between those.
Well, it's the thing about the Coens is that it's very easy not to like them because their whole filmmaking stuff from movie to movie isn't so much dependent on plot as it is about just creating a bunch of goofy characters or a bunch of characters that have, like, these really weird quirks to their personalities and then just seeing what happens. And I can easily see someone could just not be into it, think it's pretentious, but that's the thing that I like about it, because for now, like up until this point, I've clicked with everything they've had to say, but I can admit it's just as easy to get lost as it is to just think they're geniuses.
You have to kind
but
of...
Also, Nikki, Burn After Reading is probably their least pretentious movie, I think, because there's so much sort of broad, sort of slapstick kind of stuff. So, I mean, they have a very superior attitude about everybody that they're depicting, but this is the most sort of relatable in some ways.
Yes,
you know,
I think she
I've
would...
I've only seen previews, of course, on the television, and I love Brad Pitt in 12 Monkeys, and he was way out of his normal element in that movie, so I'm hoping that he'll do that, like what he did for that movie to me, even though, of course, it wasn't a comedy, but he was wild in it, like crazy. Like, he looks like he's wild and crazy on the
He's just wonderful.
In this movie.
He is just
really,
wonderful. I think this might be one of the Coen Brothers movies that you would like. And and I wanted to ask AJ what he liked so much about Burn After Reading. John and I had already touched upon that, but what did you like?
No, it really came down to the performances and how well. Because like I said, it's mostly built on character than it is on story, and I just kind of liked how all of them fulfilled these archetypes that you expect them to go one way. You expect them to be like, all right, this is how so-and-so is going to end up in the story, and this is how the other person is going to end up. And then just kind of completely defied them and just made the performances so fun. Like, I loved Clooney as, like, the, like, typical action hero type turning on his ear when he's really, like, this paranoid doofus who's obsessed with internet dating and exercise, and like I mentioned earlier, Malkovich is, he's supposed to be the high-ranking CIA analyst who's supposed to be smart and intelligent, has the mouth of a sailor. But the only one I didn't really care for was Tilda Swinton, and well, she did a good job. She performed well, but this is the role that she can, like, by now she can play in her sleep. Just turns on the Ice Queen switch and just lets it go. So it wasn't anything special, although it was well done. But, yeah, for me, it came out of the performances, which just hooked me into it, and then just the goofiness of the story and how the movie outrightly admitted that, ah, we're just having a lark. There's no point to this movie whatsoever.
But in all farces and most of the comedy, when you have a straight man, or you have to have somebody to build the comedy off of, and I think she fulfilled that role very well, but it's not her best performance. I mean, she was just fantastic in the Narnia films and in Michael Clayton. So we know that she, if they wanted her to do comedy, she could probably do comedy, but I think they were after her doing just the, being the straight person for the
yeah,
comedy.
Yeah, just stare at people for the movie. That's pretty much her job. Just give them a cold, icy stare, and there you go.
Yeah, but I really think that this Burn After Reading, it ranks in my top three Coen Brothers movies. I liked it that much. It ranks right along with Fargo and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But my favorite one of all is Fargo, and I'm so glad that we all agree about that. You know, I became a Fargo fanatic when the movie was first released back in 1996. I couldn't believe all those, so many weird, intriguing characters had been thrown together in a dark comedy, and I had the opportunity, shortly after seeing it, of interviewing John Carroll Lynch, who played Francis McDormand's duck painting husband. Do you remember that character?
Sure. Yep.
He was so good in that. And he happened to be the son of my high school debate partner, of all things. I was lucky, and I had an in that. And I asked him what it was like to work with the Coen brothers. And John said that he just admired so much the writing and directing precision of these two guys. He said there's no room for improvisation. They know exactly what they want. So I was surprised to hear that, because I thought maybe there would be a lot of improvisation going on in the, that the characters, actors would be allowed to improvise. But there was none of that in Fargo. Now, I don't know about their other movies. Have any of you heard about how they operate in making the films? Have you heard, John?
Well, I've heard the same thing, that they're very precise and they come in, sort of two heads are better than one. They've figured out everything that they feel that they need, and they let their actors, play around a little bit. But then if it's too far away from what they originally want, they bring them back. I mean, it's not like they're dictators on the set necessarily, but they're certainly very controlled and very precise in the way they work.
And they're called the two-headed director.
Mm.
That's why when they get the Coen brothers, they say they're the two-headed director. I wonder if there's anything that Nikki would like to bring up about what's going on in the chat. Any reactions, Nikki, questions?
No, just nobody agrees with me. We have Colin Brother fans in there, so I'm just going to be quiet.
You're being quiet. Most of the people in the chat room Coen Brothers fans?
Yes, they are.
They are. Do they have?
Yay!
We have some very intelligent.
There's no telling for taste. All right, that's all I have to say.
We have some very intelligent people.
Yeah, there is no accounting for taste. Ms. Transformers is my favorite movie of the year.
I was so gonna say that. You don't even know. I actually bit my tongue before I was like, okay, because I know great movies, and that would be Transformers.
Yes, I was gonna mention that too. Well, I love that film too. You know that I did.
I like some pretentious movies. All right.
Have you guys heard anything about the 2009 film that I saw one article that mentioned a Serious Man? Is that the name of it? It's supposed to be in production right now.
I haven't. Have you, AJ?
I kind of read this summary on I think it's comingsoon.net, and it seemed really, really heady to read. There was like a lot of descriptions of characters, but. You know, I have faith in the Coens. Like, even their short movie from Paris Je T'aime from last year, this little short movie with Steve Buscemi and Copper and, like, these bizarre French tourists was just so really well done. So it could be Battlefield Earth 2, and I think it'd be an awesome movie if the Coens are doing it.
Well, why do you think the Coens are so have been so successful and so popular? John, you want to try that one?
Well, I think you know, they're master craftsmen. I mean, they really are precise, and they know what they want, and they know how to write, they know how to direct, they know how to edit. They use the same composer every time, so they're really meticulous. And I think that, and they use great actors. They all have an ensemble that they always use. Steve Buscemi is one of them, and they use interesting actors. That helps. And I think, you know, everybody likes their sort of their authentically dark and pessimistic view of the world. I do, at least.
Everybody except Nikki, right?
Right.
What do you think accounts for their success, AJ?
Well, on the technical aspect, you know, John just nailed it. You know, they know how to do what they do. But for me, it's like they kind of maintain a cult sensibility because they did start out. They didn't, like, come out with a bang and have this huge $100 million movie. They started out with Blood Simple, which is this quirky little weird mystery. And then they just kind of build up. And I like how they kind of combine, like, the independent sensibilities of filmmaking. They do have these dark stories, and they do have these movies that are just tinged with all this weird humor and kind of loose plotting. But they get such big-name people to do it. And they have them who really, and they come across with really, really good performances. I think people really like that now. They don't just make movies for the masses, just put a big name star in a script that's been done a gazillion times before. They actually test actors' talents, and I think that's what people really hook into.
I think that's a good point, and also the point that John made. They're really geniuses at this darkly inventive and twisted sense of humor, and that might be their legacy that they leave to the cinema. But also, as AJ, you mentioned, their ability to get actors who are just top-notch, and I can't think of a failed performance in a Coen Brothers movie, even though I haven't liked some of their movies, like Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, I loved Hudsucker Proxy.
No Country for Old Men, and one other one which surprised me because I usually like anything about movies, Barton Fink. But other than that, when they're in the zone, I mean, they are just filmmakers extraordinaire. I'm having a little problem with the switchboard. Nikki, I have no idea what time is left, and it says show is on but not streaming. Could you help me out? What is our time factor now?
Well, I actually think we have about 11 minutes, and I just reported it. It seems like, so what happened was people can hear us who are already in there.
Excuse me?
Anybody who's already listening can hear us.
Oh,
so
good.
So we just need to keep going, and we have about 9
yeah,
more
I can confirm that, by the way. It is still streaming for me. It's working
But
fine.
Anybody new can't. It's not on air, guys, so I have them checking it out.
Okay, well, thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome.
I really, really appreciate that. I have time, then, to ask John and AJ if they thought there was any message in Burn After Reading. What about you, John? Did you see any message in it?
Well, I do think that, you know, because it is a farce and the way they sort of lampoon the CIA and, you know, sort of the intelligentsia in Washington, that they could be making a point about how the country is being run these days. You know, that's not there's some seriousness to it there, but, you know, otherwise it's pretty message-free.
And what about you, AJ?
Well, if there is a message, you know, John kind of hit on it. I like to borrow like the tagline from Smart People, that the message of the movie could be that sometimes the smartest people have the most to learn. But otherwise, no message at all. It's just pure goofiness, 100% all the way.
I did take a message away, believe it or not, and this is it: pay attention to the people close to you. And the reason I took away that message is because Frances McDormand's character could have avoided all that pain of internet dating if she had picked up on the obvious cues her smitten boss was sending her. I thought that was just that performance by, is it Richard Jenkins who played the role of the boss in the gym?
That's
he
right.
was so, oh, it, well, he was sad. I mean, he was actually the only one in the movie that was sad, because he had such feeling for Linda, the character that Frances McDormand played. But that is one way that McDormand, that character, was a little bit similar to Marge Gunderson in Fargo, because Linda was just as obsessed on getting that plastic surgery as Marge was, the police chief, in solving that crime in Fargo, so that determination was there. So that was the message that I took away. Pay attention to the people close to you. How do you think this movie stacks up to other Coen Brothers films? I've already said it's in my top three. What about you, John?
I certainly think it's in the top five or so. I love Raising Arizona, their second movie. Is pretty good, and I like Miller's Crossing with Gabriel Byrne, the sort of gangster movie. But you know, I think there's a huge difference. You hit on something about Marge Gunderson and Linda Litsky, the two characters that Frances McDormand plays. And the reason why I think Fargo works so well is the filmmakers in the film have real affection for Marge in that movie. I mean, they sympathize with her. They let the audience identify with her, whereas in Burn After Reading, they really mock everybody, and maybe the most, I mean, they mock Linda the most, or they're the cruelest towards her, and I think that's off-putting to people. But I don't see that in Fargo. I think they love Marge and her, you know, waddling around pregnant. So
good. I think that's a very, very good point. And now I see we only have 1 minute left. So I want to make sure to thank both of you, John and AJ, for being such wonderful guests again today. And, of course, I'm inviting you back as soon as you can get back on Movie Attic Headquarters again. Will you do that?
Absolutely.
Great, great. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their help in connection with this show. Special thanks to my wonderful producer, Nikki Starr, for everything she does to make the show happen. And thanks to everyone who listened live or called in, and that would be Jazz Shaw, our regular caller. We just love hearing from him. And everyone who listened to the archives or took part in the chat, we really appreciate your participation. Remember, dear listeners, don't let your life become worse than a horror movie by falling victim to identity theft. the fastest growing crime in America. Go to lifelock.com, that's LIFELOCK.com, and sign up for the important services provided there, and you'll receive a 10% discount when you use our special code REALTALK. That's REELTALK. It's all one word. Now to close the show, here's the talented A.J. Daniels with a song Nikki and I dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.
I love you.